Today, a grand jury sitting in the Eastern District of North Carolina returned an indictment against James Comey on two counts. The first count is that on or about May 15th of last year, he knowingly and willfully making a threat to take the life of and to inflict bodily harm upon the President of the United States. Count two, same day, May 15th, 2025, that the defendant, James Comey, knowingly...
I can't take any of these people seriously ever again. I can't. I just can't. I can't take any of these Ben Shapiro, any of these fucking losers. They're charging him for the 8647 tweet or whatever. Like, it's just...
And willfully transmitting in interstate commerce a communication that contained a threat to kill the President of the United States. Both of these counts carry a maximum term of imprisonment of 10 years. So I think it's fair to say that threatening the life of anybody is dangerous and potentially a crime. Threatening the life of the President of the United States will never be tolerated by the Department of Justice. Over the past year, this department has charged dozens of cases involving threats against all sorts of individuals. We take the...
You want to talk about an attack on free speech? He posted this on his Instagram and said, cool shell formation on my beach walk. We have illegal numbers. This is an illegal number. We are outlawing numbers now. Not good.
He's seriously, every single one of them. For example, just today in the Northern District of Florida, there was a guilty plea from an individual who threatened multiple political leaders, including President Trump. In the Eastern District of North Carolina, where this case was indicted earlier today, there are multiple threats cases very similar to this one, including one where the defendant pled guilty recently to threatening former President Biden, another one that's scheduled to go to trial this summer, another one indicted, an individual was indicted for threatening Tom Homan. I say that to say that while this case is unique and this indictment stands out because of the name of the defendant, his alleged conduct is the same kind of conduct that we will never tolerate and that we will always investigate and regularly prosecute. I want to take a moment to thank the hardworking members of the FBI who investigated this case over the past 11 months or so, the United States Secret Service, who also assisted in this investigation, and the United States Attorney's Office for the Eastern District of North Carolina, led by United States Attorney Ellis Boyle, who's standing to my right. This was an investigation that remains ongoing, that's been ongoing for about a year, and that's all we're going to say about it today.
A year-long investigation on an Instagram post. My God. Good use of resources there.
I will let the U.S. Attorney Boyle speak now, and then after that, Director Patel. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Attorney General. Earlier today, a grand jury in the Eastern District of North Carolina returned a true bill indicting Mr. James Comey with committing two felonies. Count one, he knowingly and willfully made a threat to kill and to inflict bodily harm upon the President of the United States in violation of 18 U.S.C. 871A. Count two, he knowingly and willfully transmitted in interstate and foreign commerce a communication that contained a threat to kill President Trump in violation of 18 U.S.C. 875C. Mr. Comey will be given every form of due process all citizens are entitled to receive, to include a trial by a jury of his peers. In the Eastern District of North Carolina, it doesn't matter who you are. We take all threat cases seriously and prosecute anyone who violates federal law, regardless of title or status. Thank you.
Thank you. As you heard from the Attorney General and the U.S. Attorney, former FBI Director James Comey has now been indicted for two felony counts. While many of you may read this indictment and view this matter as a simple investigation, it is the farthest thing from that. Every single investigation this FBI and our partners at the Department of Justice undertake, especially those that involve the threats to harm.
Don't worry. I'm sure that all of the Asmongolds and everybody else who are talking about how Europe doesn't have freedom of speech anymore, all those people are about to be heavily critical of this. Trust me, you're going to never hear the end of it from all those people.
Or hurt or even kill individuals, whether they hold public office or civilians in our country, are met with the same measure of investigative prowess and tools and personnel in partnership with the Department of Justice as anyone else. As the U.S. attorney indicated, James Comey will be afforded every matter of due process under the United States Constitution. And as the attorney general indicated, this has been a case that's been investigated over the past 9, 10, 11 months. These cases take time. Our investigators work methodically. They are career agents, career prosecutors who work these matters. They call the balls and strikes in the field as they see fit pursuant to the facts of the case and the law. They took that information and made a presentment to a grand jury, a jury of peers in the district in which the alleged crime took place. And that grand jury spoke. And that grand jury returned a two-count indictment against James Comey. James Comey allegedly threatened the life of the president of the United States. And as you all now know, shortly after posting that threat, he deleted that threat and then issued an apology. All of that information was presented to the grand jury. And Mr. Comey will have his day in court and his ability to speak to a jury of his peers. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll just take a couple of questions.
Mr. Attorney General, the Justice Department in this filing today also issued an arrest warrant for Mr. Comey. Is it your belief that that he is a continued public threat? And is there a request also for...
They issued an arrest warrant for him as well?
Detention that you anticipate will be made in this case?
So the Department of Justice does not issue arrest warrants. Grand juries do. And so the grand jury returned an indictment and arrest warrant. I expect...
They probably had to request an arrest warrant. Well, no? That'd be my guess. I could be wrong on that. But.
Hundreds of others do every year. There will be...
This guy looks like he's taking the most powerful shit of his entire life.
Some sort of arraignment set by the judge or assigned to the magistrate judge. And when that happens, you'll know about it.
But this is being handled differently from the last time he was indicted. That's my reference. In this case, the department requested an arrest warrant, right?
Well, I don't think that it's public or clear what the department requested. The grand jury issued an arrest warrant. Go ahead. Yes.
Sir, how will you prove intent when, as the director had...
Excuse me, I don't think it's public or clear. Hello? You're the attorney general. Tell us. Motherfucker, what do you mean? Well, tell us then. Make it public. Hello?
Acknowledged. Mr. Comey said he did not associate 86 with doing harm, and he took it down promptly, said it was political speech, not an intent to harm the president.
Well, this case was indicted today. This conduct occurred about a year ago, May 15th of last year. There's been a tremendous amount of investigation. And how do you prove intent in any case? You prove intent with witnesses, with documents, with the defendant himself, to the extent it's appropriate, and that's how we'll improve intent in this case. And so I think that talking about...
I'm sorry, do you have friends of Comey's that are testifying that he wanted to kill the president with his Instagram post, that he was trying to drive people to murder the president? Because I didn't see any of that in the indictment, did you? Did we read the indictment? It's three fucking pages. Oh my fucking God. I don't even want to read this. Fucking reads retardedly. On or about May 15th, 2025, in the Eastern District of North Carolina, the defendant, James Brian Comey Jr., did knowingly and willfully make a threat to take the life of and to inflict bodily harm upon the President of the United States, in that he publicly posted a photograph on the internet social media site Instagram, which depicted seashells arranged in a pattern, making out 86.47, which a reasonable recipient who is familiar with the circumstances would interpret as a serious expression of an intent to do harm to the President of the United States. Really? That's count one. Count two was just him interstate transmitting it. Upon conviction of any offense charged herein constituting specified unlawful activity, any property, real or personal, which constitutes or is derived from proceeds traceable to the said offense. Oh, the defendant shall forfeit to the United States any property, real or personal, which constitutes or is derived from proceeds traceable to the said offense. Wait, what? If any of the above described forfeitable property as a result of any act or omission of a defendant cannot be located upon the exercise of due diligence, has been transferred or sold to or deposited with a third party, has been placed beyond the jurisdiction of the court, or seek forfeiture of other said property to... Who are the witnesses? I hope he doesn't fight it. I hope he doesn't fight the indictment and he just says he wants to go to trial immediately. I would just love to see that. I want to see the trial.
What Mr. Comey will or will not do if there's a trial, when there's a trial, it's very premature. That's today.
General Blanche, I want to ask you a quick question about, there's a number of other different types of conduct Comey has been accused of over the past. One of them is abuse of FISA warrants. I wanted to ask if there's anything that we could talk about today in regards to that. But on a separate matter, if I may ask, any more updates about the ballistics forensics analysis with the shooting that happened over the weekend?
So on the first question, no, there's nothing else to report about any investigations or anything involving Mr. Comey except the indictment that was returned today by the grand jury. I don't have anything further to talk about with the ballistics that are still being analyzed. And I said it yesterday, and every law enforcement member who is speaking on this issue is saying the same thing as they should, which is that this is an ongoing investigation with really, really smart experts trying to understand what happened in that shooting and where the bullets went and ended up and where the...
What? Was it a fucking shot? Hold on. I misunderstood. Hold on.
That are still being analyzed. And I said anything...
It's about... Talk about them is abuse of FISA warrants. I wanted to ask if there's anything that we could talk about today in regards to that. But on a separate matter, if I may ask, any more updates about the ballistics forensics analysis with the shooting that happened over the weekend?
So on the first question, no, there's nothing else to report about any investigations or anything involving Mr. Comey except the indictment that was returned today by the grand jury. I don't have anything further to talk about with the ballistics that are still being analyzed. And I said it yesterday, and every law enforcement member who is speaking on this issue is saying the same thing as they should, which is that this is an ongoing investigation with really, really smart experts trying to understand what happened in that shooting and where the bullets went and ended up and where the bullets came from. And
how many sources of bullets were there? I still don't get totally why Trump hates Comey so much. Like, he's a big reason Trump is president. Is it just because he didn't stop the Mueller report? No. Trump hates Comey because Comey got him on the Russia collusion shit. All the investigations into the fucking Trump Tower stuff, all the weirdos around him that were so heavily associated with Russia. It was Trump firing Comey because Trump fired Comey to stop that investigation. He didn't want more people digging into him. After they arrested Flynn, Trump told Comey, we can stop the whole investigation, right? Because this is kind of fucking me over. Can you please stop it? And then when Comey refused to drop the investigation, Trump fired him. That's what instigated Mueller being appointed as a special prosecutor. And that whole thing set that whole... I mean, not that it matters, because none of the Americans even believe in anything related to the Mueller report or whatever anyway, so I don't know. But he fucking hates Comey for that shit, because Comey wouldn't kill that investigation.
Once that is at a place where we can definitively say, to the extent we can definitively say, we will let you know.
Director Comey posted this almost a year ago. Why bring this case now? Did you always feel like this was a strong prosecution, or did something change recently?
This investigation just didn't come now. It's the result of a lot of work by law enforcement over the past year. We don't time when we bring cases around anything other than...
What the fuck are you talking about? What the fuck have you been investigating for a year on this? Destiny, thoughts on the assassination attempt? I've seen people speculate that the shots fired by the cops and the ones who were shot was because of friendly fire. Wait, isn't that confirmed at this point now? I thought now it's been confirmed that the person who was arrested didn't shoot a single shot. The only shots fired were by Secret Service, and then one hit a fellow officer in the vest, and then he went to the hospital and then was released the same day.
The investigation is at a place where we should go to the grand jury, and that's exactly what we did in this case as well.
As a former FBI director, you may not agree with what he did. Should he be able to turn himself in as a former FBI director? He's not a flight risk.
I didn't say he can't turn himself in.
He's not under arrest right now, and he may be able to...
I don't know whether he's under arrest right now. I'm here talking to you. The grand jury issued an arrest warrant. I think that the way that this happens is different in every case. It's fact-intensive. It depends on, you're right, who the defendant is. It depends on whether he has counsel. It depends on what the judge wants done. And so I don't know when the judge will schedule an initial arraignment, if that will be scheduled by the magistrate or the district court judge. I am sure, I don't know if you want to speak to that, or if it's just something that will come up in the next coming days. You'll know when it happens. As far as what Mr. Comey does between now and then, I'm going to leave that up to the line prosecutors in the Eastern District of North Carolina, the FBI agents, and the work that they're doing.
Why, Director Patel, maybe you said that it's a complicated thing. A lot of people might think it's an easy case. Why did it take so long? I know that you guys chose to go with this now.
They have nothing on this guy. This is literally political prosecution. That's it. They have fucking nothing on this dude. He's not going to have any answers for anything. He's just going to defer the entire time to saying that... ongoing. We don't comment on ongoing investigations. Like, we'll see it at trial or whatever. This is also the indictments of these guys, right? I'm not going to go over them, but like, if you look at the Jan 6 indictment, if you look at the indictment of the, you know what? Fuck it. Now I'll bring up just like, Enrique Tarrio indictment, Department of Justice. You can look at the Mar-a-Lago, all of these indictments, bro. Remember when I debated Enrique Tarrio? All I had to do was bring up the indictment and read like two things off it, and he shut the fuck up for the rest of that debate, or at least about his case, because he knew he was fucked. If you compare the indictments that came out of the Biden DOJ to the Department of Justice now under Trump, it's like It is so night and day. This was the indictment that they issued related to the seditious conspiracy stuff, which they secured convictions on, by the way. But you've got like everybody's name, where they live, what their age is, actions that they're accused of doing, and like things that you can see like clearly. On November 6th, Tahrir posted a message that read, "The media constantly accuses us of wanting to start a civil war. Kip, what the fuck you ask for? We don't want to start one, but we sure as fuck will finish one." He posted, "Fuck unity, no quarter, raise the black flag. If Biden steals this election, the Proud Boys will be political prisoners. We won't go quietly, I promise. We need to remember we're at war with a virus, not with each other. No, you need to remember the American people are at war with you. No Trump, no peace, no quarter. It's time for fucking war if they steal this shit. No, bitch, this is war. We tried playing nice about it, right?" All these, you've got all these posts. You've got the fucking Signal chats that they were a part of. You've got the group names. You've got the things that they were planning. You've got like the people in the group chats. You've got like references to documents. You've got the whole fucking plan outlined. Like, bro, you read these indictments compared to the thinnest fuck, the airiest, lightest, cringe fuck indictments that are coming out of the current DOJ, it's an embarrassment. It's a fucking joke how crazy weak these indictments are that this current DOJ is issuing. It's just a joke.
To the layman just looking at this case, or layperson looking at the case, it was an Instagram post. He apologized. Why did it take so long?
Well, I'm not going to get into the details of the investigation itself, but a lot of these cases, you could look at when the threats were made and when charges are brought. They're not easy cases. And so we have to, there's a communication that's sent in, allegedly in this case. And so that means that we have to look at devices. Mr. Comey is a lawyer. He has lawyers. So the extent that we're looking at materials that are potentially privileged, we have to get a wall, set up a wall and let totally independent lawyers look at those. And so that doesn't happen overnight or quickly. And the statute of limitations on this is 5 years. We brought it in.
What?
Under 1 year. So that's really where we're at.
Mr. Lee, it's clear that you don't want to talk specifics today. But to the American public, can you at least give us a sense of whether you have hard evidence or evidence that shows that Mr. Comey intended for President Trump to be harmed? And then secondarily, for critics...
He's going to say, oh, we got an indictment, didn't we? Which, by the way, standard for the indictment is just probable cause.
Say, where does free speech end and an actual threat of violence begin?
I don't know what critics say that, especially today, but it's not a very difficult line to look at. And it's not, in my mind, a difficult line for one to cross over one way or the other. We cannot. You are not allowed to threaten the president of the United States of America. That's not my decision. That's Congress's decision and a statute that they passed that we charge multiple times a year. And so whether there is a defense, as you just described, maybe there is, but the government will have evidence. I am not going to talk about the evidence that we have. That's unfair to him. Fuck, it's unfair to the prosecutors, but it's enough to say that the grand jury returned an indictment. I'm just going to take one more question.
Yep, there was. They love indictments. You guys do remember. Please tell me you guys remember how much these motherfuckers hated grand juries before. That grand juries literally meant fuck all. They could eat shit because they hated grand juries.
Remember with the Daily Wire, should we expect more indictments of this sort? For example, in 2020, Gretchen Whitmer did a TV hit with 8645 on her desk in the back.
But it's enough to say that the
of this sort. For example, in 2020, Gretchen Whitmer did a TV hit with. Thank you, sir. Remember with the Daily Wire, should we expect more indictments?
The Daily Wire. What a disgusting subhuman fuck giving them ideas on who else to indict. Didn't you? Wasn't there also? Did she say Whitmer? Didn't Whitmer have a thing where they had 86 blah 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 blah
of this sort? For example, in 2020, Gretchen Whitmer did a TV hit with 8645 on her desk in the background. Is that the kind of thing you would pursue? And then just really quickly, should Comey expect to face more charges for his role in the Russia collusion investigations?
I'm not going to comment on other investigations involving Mr. Comey. He was indicted in the Eastern District of Virginia. That was dismissed on procedural grounds because of the judge's finding regarding the U.S. attorney. So that case is under appeal. As far
procedural grounds? Okay, dude.
As far as other investigations that are happening, it would not be appropriate or fair for me to comment.
Can you explain the sentiment that indictments are easy to get from grand juries? Grand juries, you need probable cause to get an indictment. In a criminal case, you have to convict beyond a reasonable doubt, okay? An indictment is issued on probable cause. However, federal governments or governments in general, prosecutors are not going after cases where they think the most evidence they can get is probable cause. Now, for smaller police departments, they might charge somebody with a crime, arrest them, and then they can do an investigation and gain more evidence or whatever, maybe off of the back of that arrest. But typically, you're charging somebody with a crime after you have enough to where you feel like you can secure a conviction beyond a reasonable doubt. So whatever's in an indictment is not all they have. The indictment is just going to be whatever they feel like they need to either make that argument to the American public so the indictment looks good, and obviously enough to show evidence to the grand jury to secure an indictment. But generally, when the feds are charging with a crime, 96% success rate or whatever, if the feds are indicting you, you're probably going to be convicted. But these guys are just fucking charging whatever they think they can get a probable cause PC on. Like, they, if they can get an indictment return, then fuck it, they'll fucking charge it. That seems to be way that the current Trump administration is working, at least for political opponents.
U.S. attorney. So that case is under appeal. As far as other investigations that are happening, it would not be appropriate or fair for me to comment on that time. As far as other incidents of threats against the president of the United States, those will be investigated. Every case is different. The facts are different. Who makes the threat matters. What the threat says matters. You're right. The question about intent matters. And we have to prove that. That's something that's our job. And that's something the prosecutors will have to do in front of a jury at the right time. But you cannot compare. It's not fair to the American people. It's not fair to the defendant. And it's certainly not fair to the prosecutors to compare, well, if you did it here, why didn't you do it there? Every case is different. But there's one thing that will never be different, which is that you cannot threaten to kill the president of the United States. Full stop. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Did President Trump's message to Pam Bondi?
You just charged the former head of the FBI and somebody who is a well-known political opponent of the president of the United States now. And you did a fucking 15-minute press conference on this indictment and then you walk the fuck away? Fuck this guy. This is some North Korea tier shit, unironically. Jesus fucking Christ.
I think that's fair. If there's another thing that characterized the Republican Party over the past decade, it's the politics of retribution. And we have seen that on display in a pretty significant way over the past several weeks, most especially the indictment earlier this week of James Brian Comey Jr. And I'll read from count one of the indictment. James Brian Comey Jr. did knowingly and willfully make a threat to take the life of and to inflict bodily harm upon the president of the United States in that he publicly posted a photograph on the internet social media site Instagram, which depicted seashells arranged in a pattern making out, quote, 8647.
Disgusting,
unquote,
of Comey to do that.
Which a reasonable recipient who is familiar with the circumstances would interpret as a
serious... What do you think he's going to soy out about Trump saying how he's going to end a civilization tonight the same way?
Who?
This guy.
I don't know. I don't know what the political persuasion of these people are, so...
Oh, well, I don't know. It sounded like he's going on a fucking rant that this is terrible, but we'll see.
Wasn't the terrible thing the indictment?
I thought that he was about to go on a rant about how what Comey actually did was terrible, so that's why I said what I said. If he doesn't, then I'm wrong.
We'll see.
I missed
expression
it.
Of an intent to do harm to the president of the United States. Sarah, is this a serious...
Oh, serious case? Like a legal case? No. It is the opposite of a serious legal case. You know that for a few reasons. One, there's binding Supreme Court precedent in a case called Watts about a guy joining the military and making a quote-unquote threat against Lyndon Baines Johnson. And the Supreme Court basically said, no, it's going to be the same policy, basically, as our incitement case law. There has to be imminence. There has to be like the actual practical ability to do the thing you're saying. Like you can spout off and say all sorts of things. And it is still protected by the First Amendment. Now, by the way, these are the same arguments I was making with all the incitement stuff about Donald Trump on January 6th. So, you know, if you're listening out there and are like, yeah, totally, this wasn't a real threat, then guess what? The same person who's telling you that also thought that the idea that Donald Trump could be charged with incitement for January 6th was also not fitting in any sort of Supreme Court precedent. But anyway,
I don't understand what she's saying, but anyway, so she's a big Jack Smith supporter because Jack Smith also didn't charge Donald Trump with incitement. That wasn't part of the January 6th charging document, largely, I believe, for the same reason that she's giving here. I'm sure she's aware of that, and she's just talking to other people that wanted a more insane indictment, and she's not actually mentioning the one that was actually issued by the DOJ, maybe, possibly, hopefully.
First Amendment for me and not for thee. It's not a serious legal case. You also know it because the prosecutor that they have on the case became a federal prosecutor on Monday. Truly, he was sworn in on Monday. He had previously been a special assistant United States attorney, meaning that he was not, a full-blown AUSA. He was doing Social Security cases. And this is not to make fun of this guy or say he's a bad lawyer or anything like that. I'm not saying any of that. What I'm saying is if the administration thought this were a case that they actually wanted to win, that they thought was important, that they thought was serious, they have like thousands of other people to pick from who are the best of the best. They have been there for a long time. They have enormous experience with, you know, criminal jury trials, things like that. But that's not who they pick.
Would those people have taken this case? Would they?
No.
Wouldn't you have had a bunch of resignations from people saying, I'm not bringing this?
Yeah.
Then no? Fine, you make them resign.
No, no, I mean I don't, that's not a criticism. My point is, like, I assume that's the case, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen that in the case against John Brennan, right? Yeah.
You would like more than 3 days to prepare your case before you file the indictment. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer.
A day and a half.
But,
So that's not what this case is about. They're not trying to get a conviction. The point is the press release. We've seen this over and over again. That was the case with the Southern Poverty Law Center. That's the case with the law firms. That's the case with the universities. These are press release indictments. Of course, that does enormous damage, both culturally and politically. It does chill speech and people's activities and thinking twice about criticizing their government. I hate that. Whether a law firm will take on a client, that should not be a political choice. And by the way, I'm not Pollyannish. Law firms were thinking about that long before this, but this has put it into stark contrast. It also means it hurts, and maybe this is in a good way, or at least we can talk about the trade-offs. When the Department of Justice files an indictment and you know you have a 98% chance of being convicted, you plead out because DOJ doesn't bring cases that they lose. And so it made the system quite efficient in that sense. If you now believe that DOJ has a, 60, 70% chance of winning, you're going to push that case to a jury trial a lot more often. Our federal system right now could not actually do that many jury trials. We don't have the resources for that. And so I think it will be very interesting moving forward. Now, this is a point that I've made before. I'm borrowing from Lindsay Chervinsky's book on John Adams. Joan and I are co-presidents of the Lindsay Chervinsky fan club slash, you know, stalkers. And her point was that nothing George Washington did mattered until John Adams did it a second time, that you have to have repeated something for it to be a norm in American politics. Now, that, of course, were good norms that were being repeated by John Adams. Here, I don't think a lot of what Donald Trump's doing at the Department of Justice, of course, it matters, but bear with me. I don't think it matters a lot until the next administration repeats it. If they repeat it, it is a norm in American politics, and the Department of Justice and the rule of law and all the things that we're talking about are badly damaged or cease to exist in a meaningfully American way as we have practiced them. If, however, the next administration comes in and does the opposite, and actually does the opposite, not just says they're doing the opposite like the Biden administration did after the first Trump administration, but actually through word and deed.
Wait, Josiah, these are Republicans, right? Are they never Trumpers or conservatives that hate Trump, I'm guessing?
Uses to repeat what Donald Trump has done, then I think this will just be a sad chapter that we can close the book on. I don't think we are already at some point of catastrophe.
Megan, do you think that's likely that the next administration will come into this? I mean, we just talked about how we're in this sort of push and pull populist moment in politics. I would love to be reasonably optimistic about the likelihood that that will happen. I'm not.
This is a hard question.
Never Trump or conservative.
And I think a lot of it is going to come down to, do the Democrats let Trump leave? And do they just say he's not going to be president again? It is not worth going after him. They did not do that in 2020. To be clear, I understand the emotional reasons that they did not do that. I was extremely upset on January 6th. I wanted him impeached, removed from office, prosecuted, and barred from ever running again, right? This is not like, I'm not saying that Donald Trump's just a normal guy and they just like, you know, poor Donald Trump. That said, I think, Sarah, you might have made the point to me that it did actually clog up. It became a problem for the DC crime rate because so many AUSAs were assigned to prosecuting January 6th protesters. And while I do think that the most serious should have been prosecuted, there was probably a line where you could say, you shouldn't have wandered into the Capitol, but you didn't destroy anything. You didn't hurt anyone.
Wandered in.
And you weren't part of the like.
It's at least a trade-off, right? You're going to spend all these resources to go after the person you just described instead of the guy who just brought a gun into a 7-Eleven down the block.
Right.
I'm sorry. How many of those did they fail to prosecute? And how many of the J6ers were successfully prosecuted? The J6er one, actually, there might not be as many because I think there was a Supreme Court decision or two that ended up causing a lot to get overturned. So,
but I think the case against Donald Trump, well, I am morally clear on what Donald Trump did. I think it was always going to be harder to prove that what he did was legally illegal and that made it maybe not a great idea to go after him. I think some of the other cases, same thing. And some of the cases were just spurious. Right. The New York cases in particular, they were just prosecutors who went out and literally declared that what they were going to do was find any.
These are all bullshit Republican talking points, but okay.
Anything they could prosecute him on. Or in the case of Letitia James, who's the New York State AG, it wasn't a prosecution. It was a civil case, but same difference. And then they did. And here's the thing. The number of progressive law professors and lawyers and so forth that I saw defending these absolutely outrageous, like, I've got an expired misdemeanor. But here, through the magic of funny words, I have turned this into 31 felonies. The number of people who defended that, they're like, it's a hard call. You think it's not a hard call. I'm sorry. If the situation had been reversed and this were Joe Biden, 0% of you would be arguing that maybe we should prosecute it.
I'm sorry. The situation was reversed and there was a special counsel for fucking classified documents that they turned over the second they had them. And there was a whole ass like 200 page Hur report that was released on it. And Hunter Biden was investigated for 72 fucking years. So I don't know. I don't understand what you're saying there, but okay.
There's probably one weirdo out there who would, but no one else. Everyone else was just engaging in motivated reasoning, and it was phenomenally destructive. And so I think the grift in the Trump administration is incredible. And yet I think that the wise thing to do is going to be for the Democratic establishment, such as it is, to form a consensus that, nope, we're done. You can prosecute the lower level people. If you catch them doing corrupt things, we're going to let the Trump family go. Not because they deserve it or they're above the law, but because it's like a red cape with a bull. The Democratic Party is not going to be able to prevent itself unless it just takes a hard line from cutting a lot of corners, making some sleazy decisions in order to get him because they want him so bad. And I understand, guys. I get it. You're justified. He's a terrible president. He has violated all sorts of norms. He has degraded his office.
Terrible president, violated norms, and degraded the office. The softest language possible.
He's going to be 82. He's not going to be able to run again. And it is better to let this walk than to establish any kind of legal precedent of like, oh, well, we just bent the law. It's just a little bit. You'll hardly notice. It's just like a little dent. It's right above the fender. You really have to look hard to see it. No. Because if you do that, as I agree with Sarah, then it's a norm.
Will you cut down all the trees to get to the devil himself?
Yep. No, I would not. No, sir.
So I on January 6th, I'm with everybody else. It was a horrendous thing. The problem
was,
I don't necessarily think Megan disagrees with me, but she said it would be difficult to through a legal case about January 6th against Donald Trump. And no offense to Sarah, but who gives a rat's ass about the legal case? It was impeachable. He should, like, I defend Mitch McConnell on 1,000 different things because I think a lot of criticisms of Mitch McConnell are stupid. But the massive
impeachment thing was retarded.
The grave error of his life was having it set up to remove, to convict in the Senate Donald Trump. And he chickened out. He chickened out for partisan reasons. I bet you if you gave him truth serum now, he would regret it.
Yep.
He didn't think it mattered. He thought that Donald Trump was politically dead. So why take the political cost of any of your guys?
I think this is actually a really good example of why Democrats should forbear. Because what you do is you, like, once the process has taken over.
But the Republicans forbeared, and now Trump came back again, and they got their whole political establishment got fucking upended by MAGA. Unless she thinks that's a good thing, I guess, for them, or that most of the Republican lawmakers would think that's a good thing.
Start convincing yourself, like, oh, I can just do this little thing, right? Mitch McConnell had a very clear obligation to the U.S. Constitution, and he abdicated it.
I agree.
For political advantage, and, like, don't do it. Just don't go there.
So that's the precedent that's already been broken, right? I mean, to the Chervinsky point about it's not a norm until it's repeated. For all intents and purposes, impeachment is a dead letter in a constitutional order at this point. It's just really hard to do, which is why I am not a big amend the Constitution guy. We got to do something about the pardon power, because if you can't impeach and remove a president and you can't plausibly threaten to impeach and remove a president, we're screwed. Because that abuse of pardon power was one of the things James Madison explicitly said was impeachable. And one of the things that lawyers, again, no offense to Sarah, that the TV pundit lawyer class has so ruined the conversation about, Sarah's holding up a book.
This is page 332 of this New York Times bestseller of proposed amendments. Number 3, make it easier to convict public officials on articles of impeachment to rebalance the separation of powers between Congress and the executive. And what follows is actual language to do so. So take up the cause, Jonah.
But my point is that the way we talk about impeachment is we talk about it as if it was a criminal trial.
Yeah.
And it's not a criminal trial. It's a political trial. It's explicitly a political trial. You can't be sent to prison by a removal from office in an impeachment Senate hearing, right? It is merely whether or not you should be fired. And then there's a question about what the law can do with you after you've been kicked out. We've completely ruined people's understanding of that. No one's above the law, blah, blah, blah. The law has nothing to do with it. And without the threat of impeachment, all sorts of things that check a president are out the window. And Biden abused the pardon power. Congress, you know, like whatever you think about the Clinton impeachment, the fact that we had 2 more impeachments for Trump, we're probably going to have a third, and that they become performative show trial, political show trial things rather than actual, you know, serious questions about the constitutional order, that is already messing up the system in enormous ways. And it is going to be, I think, a norm that makes the next Democratic president exceed the boundaries that he's supposed to work within in terms of the presidency in all sorts of ways that are hard to predict in a straight line, but they're coming.
Norm.
Oh, and one last thing. 86 does just, I just gotta be clear about, 86 does not mean murder.
Yeah, so we're going to get there. We're going to get there. Give me a second. Let me just make an observation and then
we'll
a bit pushback. I mean, surely there is a gap between, you know, the next administration. I think all of us are assuming it's going to be a Democratic administration, by the way, that we're talking to right now. We'll come in and sort of do what Trump has done, which could make these things, to your point, Sarah, your John Adams point, norms. And I think we're correct in warning against that. But surely there's a huge gap between coming in and doing the kinds of things that Donald Trump has done.
And just holding him accountable.
These retributive, just taking these retributive justice measures or attempting these retributive justice measures and actually prosecuting people for real crimes.
Yeah.
And Megan, I take your point about sort of, you know, you don't want to dwell on the past. You're going to kick up more dust. People are going to be increasingly angry. But isn't it also important for the sake of the rule of law to actually prosecute people for actual crimes in the way that they, if you could prove that they've committed them?
That's the New York case against Donald Trump, right? Like they said,
no,
like, that there's
not.
No actual
it's the opposite
crime,
of that.
But they thought it was, right? People convinced themselves that if they can find something in a criminal statute, in the federal code or whatever, that therefore there's an actual crime and that this needs to be done to uphold the rule of law.
Yeah, no, but I'm making basically the opposite point. I accept your description, Megan's description. It's the same description I have given in the past about the New York case. It was bogus, it shouldn't have happened, all of the various ways it was stretched and unseemly. I buy it all. What I'm talking about are actual crimes, real crimes that are prosecutable that you can do this. So that's sort of point number one.
But haven't Democrats proven that they're not able to tell the difference when it comes to the high emotion of Donald Trump and the people who work for Donald Trump?
Maybe.
Because again, they not only brought that case, they got convicted in that case,
and everyone used it in their campaigns. Felonies.
So should they not? They should not actually. If there are real crimes that serious people can identify, they should just avoid doing it because of appearances that it'll look like the New York case in the past.
You're going to have to give me an example of a quote real crime.
Well, I mean, look, I think there are a lot of. So first of all, I think there will be many to choose from. Unfortunately, I think given what we've seen over the course of the first 2 years of the Trump administration, but you know, I would point to somebody like a John Ossoff who's running for re-election in Georgia. relatively moderate Democrat, for why this is unlikely to happen, why what Megan laid out is unlikely to happen. I mean, Ossoff is running on prosecuting the Trump administration on crimes.
King.
And he's doing this in a purple state as a relatively moderate guy who knows he needs to win independents and Republicans. And he's making the promise. You know, if you're frustrated by the corruption that you're seeing and splashed on the front pages of newspapers every day of the Trump administration, you should know that when we Democrats are elected to Congress, when I have another term, we are going to go after them and hold them accountable for the crimes that they are committing right now. He's running on this.
So
I think the likelihood that they're going to not actually take this step is very slim.
I see this as two bundles of sticks. One bundle of sticks is you can get the real crimes, but you're also going to get the not real crimes. And like you have to take those together, or everyone gets away with it. And if I have to pick between those two, I'm picking everyone gets away with it because of the norm problem, because I'm unwilling to tolerate the prosecutions for press releases and punishment stick in that other bundle of sticks. And I know, Steve, you want to just like take out
just a heads up so you know how Republicans think. Prosecutions for headlines equal New York indictment. They got 34 convictions in court against the president. Headline grabbing investigations of things like the Mueller report, which got, I don't know how many convictions, plus like 12 indictments, plus laid out an entire Russian media manipulation scheme, plus made its money back because of the property that was seized by Manafort. Okay. That's a fake Russiagate investigation, right? These are the bullshit investigations, and those are comparable to Donald Trump's DOJ that sometimes can't even get an indictment because they don't even have a real prosecutor selected, like Halligan, over and over again. Like, it's the comparisons are so fucking crazy to me.
Real crime stick from that bundle, but I don't think you can.
There's not just one real crime stick. I think there's going to be a lot of real crime sticks.
If you have to pick between the two bundles of sticks, they come together. Which bundle are you willing to pick? Because I think that's the realistic choice that you're facing.
Yeah, I think a Democratic president is going to have to make it extremely clear that we're not doing this. That no one's doing this. That if you do this, I will make your life unpleasant. I will support primary challengers. Do not do this to every like down ticket, AG, DA. And that's the only way it's going to work, because otherwise you're going to get the fake crimes.
Can a Democratic presidential candidate get elected on that?
Dude.
Hey, I'm running. No. I'm running and I'm not going to go after Donald Trump.
You don't
Trump.
Run on it. It's when you win.
You just, yeah. You don't
lie to the voters. Let's defeat the voters. And then
like us when we win, said Josh Lyman, or maybe Toby.
But also the voters, I don't actually think the voters are hungry to see Trump prosecuted.
Nope.
I think like 4 Democratic primary voters are. And everyone else just wants to get on with their life and close that chapter.
And have their gas be less expensive and their groceries less expensive and have some health care that they promised.
Fuck them.
Yeah. Would they also like Trump to be prosecuted? Maybe, but they'd like all those other things first.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I buy that. So speaking of, this is sort of the perfect setup for our wonderful Not Worth Your Time. Speaking of norms and 86, Joni, you strenuously objected to the definition of 86 that the court is using, or the grand jury is using, in going after James Comey, where it's taken as a given that 86 means we are going to kill the president. That is the basic assumption underlying count one from this grand jury. 86 does not mean that. Do you have ideas about what 86 means and where it comes from? Because
this is so stupid.
So this is our Not Worth Your Time? Like, what is 86
So we're mean? sort of like collapsing into a Not Worth Your Time. So yes, 86, give me your definition before we get to the formal Not Worth Your Time, and then I will introduce the Not Worth Your Time.
Okay, because I feel like you're setting us up for some sort of little kid joke about...
It's not a joke.
886, because 789. Anyway, okay, so 86, I grew up understanding meant you were cut off at a bar, or you were not to be served anymore. And one of the reasons why I know this is not because I was cut off at bars when I was a 10-year-old or whatever, but I grew up watching Get Smart. And Maxwell Smart and in Get Smart was Agent 86. And that was the joke, right? I mean, that was like with Mel Brooks and was it Buck Henry? That was a funny name. Instead of 007, it's Agent 86, right? And if that meant elite assassin, it would have come through more in the show, I feel. And so, like, I know people, I never really worked in the food and beverage industry, but I know people who did. And they're like, people would say, oh, yeah, we had to 86 them. I mean, that's the way I've always heard the term. And Comey, you know, what does the actual text of the thing say? He says, interesting shells, right? Like,
and the shells spelled out on the beach,
86-47.
Yeah.
Right. And like, even if disgusting. That was the person who put the shells down meant to murder Trump, Comey can just be like, even if he thought it meant murder Trump, saying interesting shells is not saying go murder Trump. It's like, you could have posted a picture of someone having put up graffiti saying murder.
Oh my God. I just had a brain blast. I know what the additional evidence is that the Trump admin has that makes them feel like they can indict this fucking case.
Which is?
Hold on, give chat 1 second. I don't want to see if anybody mind melded with me on this. I'm about to say the most retarded fucking thing in the universe. This would be so dumb. But I wonder if their theory is that when Comey posted this picture on Instagram, he made it sound as though he happened to stumble upon this arrangement of shells made by somebody else. But we have text message evidence that of him communicating with somebody saying that he arranged it himself. And that's why we're charging this particular crime. That would be so unbelievably fucking retarded. But I wonder if that's they have him like in a text message, like admitting to arranging the shells and like, that's why we're charging this one. But that would just be crazy.
Trump. And you say, interesting graffiti, right? That's still not calling for Trump to be murdered. So anyway, I think it's just incredibly stupid.
By the way, you can say, I agree with this graffiti. You can, I mean, you can say all sorts of things and we're still not even close to the criminal line of what's not protected by the First Amendment. BT dubs.
Let's just say James Comey is extraordinarily annoying. It was such a stupid post, unworthy of like a preteen jab. Foolish to do in every respect. So I think, and I'm not objective about this, I think the term 86, and probably you've heard this or read this, especially Jonah and Megan, since you are native New Yorkers, comes from Chumley's in the West Village, which was a bar that was opened by an anti-prohibition activist named Lee Chumley, who used it as a speakeasy. And the bar had doors on two different streets, two different sides. One of those doors was 86 Bedford Street. And the story goes, and it's been recorded by the New Yorker, it's in this book that I do not have, but really want to have, about the history of bars in New York City, great bars in New York City, by a woman named Jeff Klein. The Chumley's story goes as follows. Hang on, I've got to move this.
A woman named Jeff Klein.
A woman named Jeff Klein wrote this.
A boy named Sue.
Okay.
This book, it like covers a lot of my old hangouts when I lived in New York City. So I'm
all the places you got 86 from.
Interested. Yeah. So here is how it's described in The New Yorker, famous for its fact checking. The rich history of Chumley's precedes its latest iteration. Its latest iteration, it is now a steakhouse. Opened during Prohibition in 1922 by the activist Lee Chumley, the bar was a reliable place to get a stiff drink for writers including Ernest Hemingway, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Willa Cather, and Dylan Thomas. It even has its own contribution to the lexicon as the birthplace of the term 86th, derived from the back door at 86 Bedford Street, through which patrons were advised to skedaddle when the police were en route. So what they would do is they would get a tip from either a sympathetic cop who knew that there was a potential bust or from somebody else, and they would then allow the police in sort of one door, shoo the patrons out another door, throw sawdust, and I think bleach was the old story. I think that's the origin of the term 86. So my question, dear panelists, Chumley's was my favorite, one of my two favorite hangouts for the year that I lived in New York City. I had a friend, Dave Chase, was a buddy of mine from college, from undergrad, lived right around the corner. We spent a lot of time and a fair amount of money at Chumley's, which at that point, this is late 90s, early aughts, had become a firefighter hangout. And it was a great classic New York City bar. And we got to the point where people knew us when, you know, occasionally we walked in, a bartender might recognize us when we pulled up to the bar. Did you all have a place, either a restaurant or a bar, where you were a regular, where people knew what your order was, whether it was a drink, whether it was food, some place, maybe not quite to the level of norms, speaking of norms, like Norm on Cheers, where everybody called your name when you walked in?
This is like a Dan story.
He's getting to it. Hold on.
You know what?
You were
the payoff. Yeah. Okay. The payoff matters.
Regular. And if you did, what was it and what did you get? And I'll start with you, Megan.
My regular place was Koch's Deli in, it was actually in Philadelphia. And my regular order was a roast beef on rye with butter and salt and pepper. I love that sandwich so much. The roast beef was really good. It was so lean and rare. It got to the point where like I would walk in the door and there would be a line. There was almost always a line. And by the time I got to the counter, he would just hand me the sandwich that he'd been making as the other, you know, like, yeah, it was so good. And the knish that I would get with it. Those were the days, man.
Sarah, did you ever have such a place?
When I was 4 years old, my mother would walk me from preschool.
Okay, maybe this is just like a short story sharing segment.
Over to the soda shop. This is in downtown Richmond, Texas, which had a population of about 2,000 people. It has the like noon horn, you know. And this is where Santa Anna marched to be defeated at San Jacinto, which is many, many miles away. But, you know, you got to get there somehow. And I would walk in, sit down on the stool, which was difficult for a four-year-old to get up on. And I would say, I'll have my usual. And one day I turned to my mother and said, what's a usual?
That's freaking epic.
My usual was a grilled cheese.
Beautiful. Jonah, did you have such a place?
Not where anyone would call out my name or anything. Two places. One, growing up in New York City in the 1980s, before the drinking age went to 21, it was 18 or 19, whatever. And so starting about 9th or 10th grade, we would go to this bar with fake IDs up by Columbia. Megan might know it, Cannons.
I feel like Alec Guinness. That's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
So that was our big hangout. And then it became a thing where... for 15, 20 years after college, me and my friends from high school would meet there on the night before Thanksgiving and make bad decisions. And in the 1990s in Washington, D.C., some of you may recall the Toledo Lounge in Adams Morgan, which was created by...
Jesus, who gives a fuck, man? Stephanie
they're sharing their lives, bro.
Who I dated for about 30 seconds, but was a good friend of mine and her sister Mary, and they grew up in bars in Toledo.
You're just
and
a hater,
at one point,
bro.
Stephanie, I tried to help her get a book contract, wanted to write a memoir called My Life Behind Bars. and it was good barbers. And the Toledo Lounge was definitely my hangout throughout much of the 1990s. And there, if I walked in, they would yell Jonah, because I usually knew the bartender, whoever was working there, and the wait staff and that kind of thing. And other poor decisions were made there.
So that's very funny. The Toledo Lounge is also
my... They're like, I love this.
Problem.